Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of the new screensavers is brought to you by Joby. Joby's GorillaPod is the signature flexible tripod amongst leading photographers and journalists. Currently, Joby is transitioning to a new production center and isn't accepting orders. However, leave your email with them for an update on product availability, and when they're back, receive 15% off your first order. Go to joby.com and enter TWIT at checkout. And by WordPress. Your customers want to find you. Build a WordPress.com website and help them connect with your business. Get 15% off any new plan purchase at WordPress.com/NSS. And by Qualcomm Snapdragon Gigabit LTE. To make the most of your unlimited data plan, go to snapdragon.com/gigabit.
The tiny jelly phone versus the iPhone 8 Plus, Moms Who Code, and a review of Nikon's D850. Live from the Twitty Side Studios, it's the new screensavers.
Everybody, calm down. I know it's awesome to be around two incredibly tall people as us.
Oh yeah.
How's it going? Leo's not here. He is traveling the world right now.
Yes.
But I'm Jason Howell. This is the new Screensavers. This episode 123, recorded Saturday, September 23rd, 2017. Jason Howell standing here with Rich DeMuro. How's it going, Rich?
Doing fantastic. You know, I'm the tech guy for KTLA in Los Angeles, so We've worked together at CNET back in the day.
That's right.
It's great to be here. I don't even know. Well, we got lots of stuff going on here, but great to be here.
There's a lot of distraction. We were kind of talking about that earlier, how right in our view are at least two different screens that show us the chat room, which has got to be a little bit different. I don't know. KTLA, do you have a live chat going
no,
all the
we
time
definitely,
telling you what you're doing?
We close off the audience all the time. We don't want to hear from them. No, I'm just kidding. We love the audience. But no, it reminds me of when I do like the Periscopes or like the Facebook Live, and I do get distracted because I'm used to doing TV, but I'm used to just seeing myself. And then I'm like, what?
Yeah, don't get lost. It'll pull you in. It'll pull you in. Although, at the same time, we have an awesome chat room.
Yes.
Folks who are really just interested and connected with the content that we're doing. So that's why we have it. Because sometimes, honestly, they end up answering the questions that, I mean, at least for myself, that I don't have the answers for.
And it feels alive. You feel alive knowing that there's people out there that are actually watching and interacting. So it's a blast. Thanks for having me, by the way.
Yeah, it's great to be here, man. It's great to see you in person once again. It's been a while. For those who aren't that familiar, I mean, you were filling in for Leo on The Tech Guy here. At the Twit Studio, tell people a little bit about kind of what you do in LA, KTLA,
so,
all that stuff.
Filling in for the Tech Guys show, which on the radio, which was amazing. Thank you, Leo, for that. But in Los Angeles, I host a TV segment on KTLA Channel 5, which is a local station there, and it goes out to a bunch of TV stations around the U.S. So I talk about tech news, gadgets. You guys talk about a lot of the same stuff here.
Yeah,
mine is for a little bit more broad audience. You know, people just watching their local news are like, and who's this guy that comes on and talks about the new iPhone or the new whatever?
He's the Channel 5 tech guy.
Yeah, and look at that picture. I mean, come on, you don't get those kind of pictures. I mean, I don't think I've ever looked like that in my life, but that's me on the KTLA website.
Can't you take that exact picture with the iPhone 8?
Now you can. Actually, that was taken several years ago, and now the iPhone saw that picture. Tim Cook saw that picture and was like, we're going to build it into the next iPhone, make everyone look that amazing.
Perfect. Yeah. Just the other day, it was just yesterday, Megan Maroney was showing off her iPhone 8 on Tech News Today with me, and she took one of those, the dynamic lighting, what is that called?
There's stage lighting.
Yes.
I mean, it's just, I think I just have to do it right now. I think you have the perfect face for this.
I'm going to have like a whole catalog of these photos, apparently.
I think iOS 11 is working perfectly.
Is it locked upside down?
It's locked upside down. So I'm going to turn my phone. Maybe we shouldn't do this.
Maybe we should.
Here we go.
Okay,
let's do this right now. Let's do the stage light. Oh, my gosh. This is going to be your next picture. Okay, it's taking a little bit of time.
Is that distinguished enough? Look at that. Oh.
How does it do that?
That's so crazy.
That's pretty good, but it's funny.
How does it make me handsome?
I was reading online. A lot of people were saying that this is, like, not that good. Like, it's a parlor trick. And, like, come on. I mean, who cares? It looks awesome. Yeah. It's fun. It's like, let's have fun with this stuff. I mean, I think that we're going to see a lot of profile pictures with
You're going to see a lot of that before people burn out on it completely.
Do you eat a lot at a restaurant in town? Because I will blow this up and they can put it on the wall.
I'll have to get back to you on which restaurant I'm actually not planning to go back to. And then they can put that picture on the wall and then I never have to look at it.
Okay.
We've got a lot to talk about today. Why don't you tell people what we have to talk about today?
We've got tons of stuff. We've got the Moms Can Code here in studio to talk about their community that offers resources and support to moms who want to get into coding. That's awesome.
Yeah. We've also got Carrie Rose on the line from dpreview.com. He's going to give us his take on the Nikon D850 DSLR camera.
And talking about cameras, we've got Megan Maroney here. She has a review of the Front Row camera. It's a wearable camera that records and live streams everything around you. That's kind of scary.
That is a little scary. But, I mean, what are we doing here right now?
I was going to say, if you work here, what's the difference?
Yeah, exactly.
With the chat room.
We just have 10 cameras pointed at us instead of one camera pointed outward. Father Robert is going to have some tips on how to do the Internet of Things on more of a budget scale. So if you want to, you know, if you want to tackle it from that perspective, there you
And we're going to answer your questions and call for help and the mailbag.
All right. But we always start things off with the new screensavers, with the hot topics. And there have been a few, and that's not the, that's not Hot Pockets, by the way. It's different.
You know, I think I lived on Hot Pockets in college. I'm pretty sure that that was the only thing in my freezer.
I lived on those, and I thankfully moved on to Hot Topics. That's what I eat for breakfast.
Wow, well done.
Which, let's talk about it a little bit. So Uber having some issues, at least in London. Apparently the London Transportation Authority, Transport for London, announced that it's revoking Uber's license.
Because they're not
operating in the city.
They're not fit and proper.
Fit and proper. Well, we've heard a whole lot of stories and a whole lot of reports about the many ways that Uber is not fit and proper. But I feel like this is kind of a big deal. Uber's had a lot of problems in a lot of different places throughout the world, and that's, you know, part of what has made the news so much over the past couple of years. But when a city like London, this globally, you know, traveled to known city, I mean, this is a major destination. You're talking, what is it, 40,000 drivers, 3.5 million passengers.
It's a lot.
As far as Uber said, not renewing that license affects a lot of people. What do you think about that?
I mean, it's interesting because I feel like London was one of those cities that was like a last holdout at the beginning when Uber kind of first started. They were like, we're not letting them come here. And then all of a sudden, like Uber does in every city, they get in there.
They make it happen somehow.
And here's the thing. A lot of this probably comes down to money. You know what I mean? Like, that's in most of the cities that Uber's having trouble with. It's some sort of licensing arrangement or financial arrangement. I don't think Uber's bad. Obviously, they've changed the fabric of our world, and they're an amazing service that a lot of people use. But I think that London sort of wants more time to figure this out. But here's the weird thing. So they said they're taking away their license on, like, whatever it is, September 30th, but they don't have to stop operating.
No.
So they still get, like, 21 days to kind of talk about it. So I feel like whenever there's, like, that much time to kind of figure this stuff out, it's more like a financial agreement. Like, hey, we need to either make money off of this, somehow tax it, or somehow license you guys to operate in our city. So I think they're going to get through this like they do in every other city. London is a huge city to be operating in, and I don't see them going away anytime soon in that city.
Yeah, Uber CEO, actually, the new Uber CEO, Dara Khosrowshahi, sent a memo.
Wait, how do you say that again?
Khosrowshahi?
Okay, just making sure.
Yeah, it took me a while to learn that one, to be honest.
I don't think I said it out loud, so I'm just like, okay, I want to make sure I know how to say his name.
You could trust me, Rich. Actually, you probably don't want to trust me, but I'm pretty confident that that's how you say his last name. He said in this memo that was leaked, it was to the staff, he said some things that I feel like we've been kind of hoping to hear from Uber for a while from the inside. Basically, he says, irrespective of whether we did everything that's being said about us in London today, and he says, to be clear, I don't think that we did, he says, it really matters what people think of us, especially in a global business like ours, where actions in one part of the world can have serious consequences in the other. And I think that's at least that shows some sort of self-reflection on the part of Uber to realize, like, they have not made, like, they've made a lot of decisions that have turned a very negative eye on them.
Absolutely.
And that they really need to kind of reflect a little bit more inward. Part of Dara's hiring is proof of that.
And that's the good news about having a new guy, too.
Yeah.
Is that he can kind of be this guy. And this is part of the reason why they needed someone new, is now you have a person who's like, look, that was the old Uber.
Right.
We are the new Uber, and we're going to make good on our past mistakes, and we're not going to operate the same way we did.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good thing. But at the end of the day, a lot of people rely on this. A lot of jobs.
It's true.
You know, a lot of tourists are familiar with it from using it in other cities, and they feel comfortable. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't London have some of the best cabbies in the entire world? Like, aren't these guys known to be, like, literally the best cab drivers on the regular cabs?
I have not been to London. Okay. I don't know firsthand.
Well,
but I trust you.
Oh, I just remember when Uber was there, I think that was part of the argument, is that,
okay.
In London, I feel like these cabbies literally have to take, like, some sort of crazy test or something where they know everything about the city and how to get around, and that was part of what Uber was like.
We've got technology and navigation on our phones.
Okay, now tell me, can you type in the address where you're going, and
yes.
I'll take you there?
I mean, perfect.
I've had that experience. Yeah. Uber is sort of a mixed bag sometimes.
You
know, you get in, and it's like, you can tell in 5 seconds when you get in an Uber if you're going to have a good experience or a bad,
mm-hmm.
because you get in there and, like, the person is literally fumbling with their phone or, like, they don't have it together, and you're just like, oh, no, can I just exit right now?
I
other times you get in and they're like, oh, may I offer you a mint, or there's water in the door, and you're like, oh, thank you.
I'm also a DJ. They're, like, driving and mixing records as they go along. True story. You can look that up. You probably don't want to get in that Uber, by the way. A little bit of distracted driving going on there, I'm guessing. Another story that's been kicking around a little bit was, I mean, at first it was a room. It was a very often passed around rumor that Google was potentially going to buy HTC, the smartphone company that has not had very many good years in recent times, but was flying high back in 2011, at least in the world of Android smartphones. And then we have news that basically they're paying Google's paying $1.1 billion in a deal to bring 2,000 HTC employees over to Google to help them with the hardware organization at Google. This doesn't include any factories or anything. It's not, you know, controlling the supply chain. It's literally just bringing over HTC employees and saying, we're going to put you to work now in a more official way on all of our hardware efforts.
This is the oddest deal I've ever heard of in my life. I mean, why not either buy the company or, you know, it's like we're buying employees. They just bought $1.1 billion worth of employees.
Yeah.
But HTC still gets to operate. They still get to do whatever they want to do. It makes the Android landscape even more complicated than it already is. In Android world, we need to be less complicated. When the Pixel came out, it seemed like the savior to Android, because it was like, here's a device which is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It hit every single point we needed on Android, including a nice design, nice cameras. You know, the software was just amazing. Of course, it didn't have wireless charging, didn't have water resistance back then.
It had some issues, yeah.
You know, but the reality is, it was a really good start. And in Android, we don't have a company that's just making a phone every year that gets better like the iPhone. You know, the iPhone, you know, it's not going to change much. It just kind of every year gets a little bit better.
I think some people might argue that that's Samsung. Samsung with the SA, you know, with their Galaxy S series, that every year that's the iteration that is probably the most visible on the Android.
Okay, I guess that's a good argument. But the problem, I mean, I guess I've always sort of discounted them because it's not the stock Android experience. It's
right.
Not like that pure experience that, you know, if you're mm-hmm. super into Android, you kind of want that Pixel delivered. Anyway, I just think this is an odd deal. I don't see really how it benefits Google to buy these employees, because what's the end game here?
Mm-hmm.
You're getting these employees, and you're not getting anything that was exclusive IP, which was kind of weird.
They have a deal for which is non-exclusive for license HTC's intellectual property.
Yeah.
So they get a piece of anything HTC's doing there.
The good news is this will help them propel the Pixel a little bit more, because they'll have much more control, because it's basically their device now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're seeing that over and over with, like, the Microsofts of the world and the Samsungs and the Apples, is that we kind of have to have more control over these things. You know, like, the less hands on it, the better the device is sometimes. And that's sad, because the whole idea of Android was that, you know, anyone can build it and anyone can make what they want out of this operating system, but it's kind of been a mixed bag because of that.
I'm curious to see what happens here. Obviously, last year's Pixel largely behind the scenes. I mean, that was built by HTC, even though Google did a really good job of kind of obscuring that to the majority of people that kind of looked inward. It was touted as being Google's Pixel, but HTC was really behind the scenes helping with that. The expected smaller of the next generation Pixel 2 is supposedly developed by HTC in the same manner. The larger one by LG. So I'll be curious to see if these two phones come out and the LG one ends up being the better pick.
And see, People are going to be like, oh man, they
just bought HTC. Oh no, what did they do?
That's where it gets weird.
Yeah.
Because you have two phones, the same type of phone, and it's being made by two different manufacturers. Like, what? Who? I mean, I get that like the average consumer is not sitting there going, oh, my phone's made by HTC versus LG. But like, you have people on the Samsung side that are like, there's two different chips inside some of the phones, like even in like the Note or whatever, or the S8, where they're like, oh, I have the, I don't even know what they're called, but like, you know, in Europe it's one chip, and in America
Exynos,
it's a different chip.
Yeah,
you know?
Exynos in Europe and the Snapdragon.
So there are some people that do pay attention, but I think the Pixel was the best Android phone of last year, hands down. I mean, I still think the camera on that thing, apparently now the 8 is better, the iPhone 8, according to DxOMark. I don't know if I believe that, because the Pixel was literally the most amazing camera I've ever used.
I would agree, but I'm all in when it comes to Google's products, and the Pixel has been my device up until yesterday when I got a phone, which we'll talk about in a second, but not at any point before we talk about your new phone. What did you get?
Well, this is the iPhone 8 Plus. And, you know, I have a case on here, so you can't really see
it. Yeah, it looks a little different.
You can't really see the true beauty of this. So here it is. Have you ever seen this before? This is called an iPhone. Have you ever seen this design?
Yes.
No, I mean, the design, it's funny, because if you looked at this thing from the front, I mean, obviously you can't tell the difference between this and last year's. But this is the 8 Plus, and you can tell on the side when you get here that that's the gold coloring. And then, of course, when you get to the back, you can see the glass. And I actually like the glass better.
This is last year's.
Wait, hold on. Oh, you got to do it at the right angle so they look different.
Wait a minute. No, they look exactly the same except for a little bit of extra reflection.
Okay, yeah. So this one, you could see the matte finish there. I think this feels grippier in your hand because, you know, it's glass.
Uh-huh.
But also they're saying that the back is now more expensive to replace than the front if you have AppleCare. Apparently it's $100.
No way. No way. Are you
and
serious?
The front is $30 if you have the AppleCare. So,
okay.
That's interesting. You know, here's the thing about the iPhone. I go back and forth between iPhone and Android, and I see both for, you know, the benefits that they offer, obviously.
Yeah.
This the ecosystem is unmatched. I mean, there's just, you know, you do one thing on here, and it does it across all of your devices. And it's simple, you know? Mm-hmm. Android, there's a lot of differences, you know what I mean? Like, I can't say that one is good for one person, one's good for another person, because everyone's so different, you know? Like, you love Android and Google because you rely on Google products, you know?
Absolutely.
If you're on an Android, on an iPhone, it's like sometimes you're like, oh, the Google stuff doesn't work as well, you know?
Yeah, it's not as deeply integrated as it is on Android. That's one of the strengths of Android, is that there's, you know, at least for a wide variety of different developers and products and whatever, they have access to those deeper levels, whereas on iOS, it's kind of Apple has access to those deeper levels.
And that's what frustrates me about Apple, and I get both sides. Like, everything is sort of sandboxed on the iPhone. Like, if I'm an app developer, you know, it's like, oh, if I want to integrate with Siri, it's like I can sort of, kind of. Like, I just saw that Evernote is doing something with that. But on Android, it's like anyone can do it. You know what I mean? You don't have to have the blessing. But it also, that's the downside of it, too, because it sometimes can be a little bit more frustrating because everything can do everything.
Mm-hmm.
There can be a lot of conflicts. Whereas on iOS, it's like, you know, it's just, I don't think you ever need to restart an iOS device, ever. You know?
Yeah, I wish I could say the same about Android.
Android has a countdown in the settings of what the uptime has been. I mean, that's called an engineer sitting there going, hey, let's see how long we can keep this thing going.
It's probably good that we let them know how long it's been
going. You can keep track.
So, okay, so you basically just got it. I mean, camera-wise, are you pretty happy with the pictures that you have taken with it?
You know, I need to test the low-light pictures, because that's real. I mean, I think the iPhone takes amazing pictures in bright, nice lighting.
Yeah.
And it takes a good pictures in a wide variety of lighting. I think I actually don't give it as much credit, because I test a lot of Android phones that, you know, they're always one-upping the camera situation.
Right.
But when it comes to the iPhone, I think it... overall does a really nice job in like a variety of situations of kind of getting a nice picture without a lot of fuss. Mm-hmm. I think that the low light situation needed to be improved. I think the front facing camera really needed to be improved, and they didn't do anything with that, which I find a little odd because on the Samsungs, you know, they went from 5 to 8 megapixels, yeah. And they said like, hey, you know, with autofocus, we're actually going to make it, you know, we're going to make this better. Mm-hmm. And with iPhone, they just don't care. Like, they see the front-facing camera, which takes the most selfies in the world, as literally a FaceTime camera. Mm-hmm. They don't even consider it like a real camera, I feel like.
And now, they're holding out because on the next one, it's going to be.
I think we do have the next one. In
well, I guess we do.
The next one. Okay. So we have to wait.
Because they always have to leave something for them to improve in a big way.
And also the wide angle. Like you on an Android device, you get a much wider field of vision on the selfie camera so that you can fit more people in your pictures. Yeah. And on the iPhone, I keep thinking they're going to improve that. I mean, literally, you hold it here, and it's like your entire face fills up the screen. Again, it's mostly made for FaceTime.
Right.
So I think that's a little frustrating. But again, it's stuff that not everyone notices if you're not testing every single phone or kind of comparing them. Mm-hmm. You just use it, and you're like, I'm happy.
Can I show you something that you'd be jealous of now that you have that phone and you don't have the phone I have?
What do you have?
It fits inside this tiny little pocket. I don't know if you know in jeans you have this little...
Wait, the fifth pocket?
Yeah, the pocket that only change fits into. I have a phone that fits in there, and it's not from Zoolander. This is not the Zoolander phone. It is running Android. It's running Nougat, in fact. Not quite Oreo.
It looks like an Oreo, though. It could be the size of an Oreo.
Yeah, it's kind of it's like smaller than a candy bar, actually. It's called the Jelly, and it's the smallest 4G smartphone. It's by Unihertz. It's actually a Kickstarter that, you know, surprise, surprise, this Kickstarter actually fulfilled.
What?
So pretty cool. I got this for $79 not too long ago. And like I said, it fits in that small pocket on the jeans, so you don't even need a case. You just throw it in the pocket you never use. The one that I have here is a gig of RAM and 8 gigs of storage. So we're talking simple, slim. This is not meant to be, I don't think anyways, your everyday phone. But like,
Unless you could
get like an armband for this. This would make like a nice little gym phone, right? Because it's got, you can run all Android apps, so you can put any music streaming service on here, and it's that tiny little form factor.
Now, can you number sync this to your regular device? Or, you know, because I know with like AT&T and T-Mobile, they have like digits or whatever. Can you do that with this device, or have you looked into that?
I've got my SIM plugged into here.
So you just took your SIM and popped it in?
Yeah, exactly. It's got it's dual SIM, so you can put two SIMs in here. So I've already made a number of phone calls on it, which is really weird. It's weird to hold
really
this tiny
funny to
phone up to your face and like,
I mean,
how's
come
the sound on the other side? Hello, everybody.
I feel like if you're using that phone out, you have to like basically show people. You're like just looking around. You're like, yeah, I'm making a call. Uh-huh,
I went grocery shopping earlier today, and I did actually pull this out to like check things, and I realized I was in the middle of the grocery store with the world's smallest like. A smartphone. I felt ridiculous, but
you can have a lot of fun with that. Like you take your stuff out at like a party, and you're like, I know it's in my pocket somewhere, and you're like putting your phone out, and like, wait, is that a phone?
And then you pull it out of your shirt pocket entirely. This tiny little thing was fitting in there.
So, what's the use case for this? What? Why do people need? Is it like a secondary phone? Is it a running phone? Like, what's the deal?
I feel like that's kind of its purpose. I mean, aside from being an obscurity, right? Like, it's very interesting to see the smallest of anything, and who knows if it's actually the smallest. I'm sure if you went, like, to, you know, some marketplace in China, you might find something even smaller and, you know, shaped like a bunny or something. But, you know, it's super small. It's super inexpensive. 950 milliamp hour battery. I think the use case for me is, like, going to the gym or going for a run.
Right.
And, you know, you don't have to worry about anything else on it. I don't know if it's... Yeah, no. Typing on this thing is a nightmare.
So does it have voice? It has Google Assistant and everything. Is it? It's on Nougat. You said?
Yeah, it's on Nougat. I should be able to get Assistant on here. I haven't checked on that yet.
How are the pictures?
I haven't taken any because it's a 1 megapixel front facing camera. No, 2 megapixel front facing camera. 8 megapixel rear facing camera. I mean, we might as well.
Is it USB-C or what? What? I mean, I'm just curious because
It's not USB-C. It's USB-B, old school technology.
Okay, here we go.
Okay, so you did my awesome headshot, and now I've done your awesome headshot here.
I hope
it's
this is
little
my next
non-responsive
profile picture.
Way.
Oh, huh? It's really look at that's.
Hey, let's zoom in for immaculate detail.
I think that looks pretty good, actually.
Not too bad for a tiny little candy bar thing.
That's my next profile picture.
There you go.
So maybe I think the use case is twofold. It's to wow and impress your friends with that tiny little device.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, you've got to pull it out everywhere you can. Like any opportunity you see at the gym, at the grocery store, at a party, your friend's house, you got to like just pull this thing out and nonchalantly be like, "Hang on, let me check my phone."
You need to use my phone? I got one for you.
Oh, and here, you want this? Go ahead. I've got plenty of them.
Yeah, it only cost me $70.
Comes in like a 12-pack.
No big deal. All right, cool. So now we know, you know, the battle royale between the two biggest phones of the year. So that's good. We have that out of the way.
Yeah.
And we're going to get to a whole lot more here. But before we do, let's thank the sponsor of today's episode of the Screensavers. That is Joby. This episode of the new Screensavers is brought to you by Joby. In 2006, Joby revolutionized creativity with the first ever flexible tripod. You could put these things anywhere. It was called the GorillaPod. Now with over 10 million sold, they've made them even better. New designs feature their signature ball and socket joint legs that you are very familiar, very recognizable. Rubberized grip rings and stainless steel reinforced ball heads with 90 degree tilt. Perfect for shooting in landscape or even portrait mode. I could probably put this jelly in there if I wanted to. GorillaPod's flexible legs wrap around objects for precise composition control. You can wrap it around like a handrail wherever you happen to be. You know, if you're recording something and you need a stable position for this, just wrap it around whatever you have there and it does the trick. Rubberized rings and foot grips provide stability on uneven surfaces for crisp, clear photos. You can mount a variety of devices, including point-and-shoot, action, 360-degree cams, mirrorless, DSLR cameras, whatever you have. You can also mount flashes, video lights, or any device with a quarter-inch to 20 standard tripod mount. It's flexible, it's stable, and it's versatile. Grip it, wrap it, stand it, whatever you got. See the full line at Joby.com. Currently, Joby is transitioning to a new production center, isn't accepting online orders. So definitely check back soon, or you can leave your email with them for an update on product availability. Once they're accepting online orders, just enter TWIT at checkout. You'll receive 15% off. That's Joby.com. And soon you can enter TWIT at checkout for 15% off your order. And we thank Joby for their support of the new Screensavers. All right, I think it's time to rove on over to the set. We're going to talk with Erica Peterson, who is the founder of Moms Can Code. How's it going, Erica?
Good. How
Hello.
Are you?
Good.
Hi again.
We'll do our transition over to here.
Welcome.
I know. It's like this is your table.
Yeah.
We're just guests.
I've been waiting.
I want to know first, how many kids do you have?
Two.
So two kids.
Feels
how old?
Like 20. I have two.
Two kids are like exponential.
Yes.
One kid is like feels like a lot, and mm-hmm. then when you get two, it's like a little bit less, but still a lot more.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have two. I have a 5-year-old and a 22-month-old.
Oh, wow. He's... Hands full.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And so let's talk about Moms Can Code. This is a community that supports moms interested in learning how to code both online and offline.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So why did you start this?
Well, I was interested in learning how to code, and I went online, and there's a lot of information out there. A lot of it's geared towards women who want to return to the workforce. Not a lot of it was geared towards just wanting to learn and where to start, where do I find that information. And I figured there's a support group for everything mom-related, mm-hmm. but there wasn't mm-hmm. anything out there for moms who were interested in learning how to code. Mm-hmm. So I just started using the hashtag #MomsCanCode. And people started responding. And
where were you using this hashtag?
On Twitter, on Instagram, Twitter. Facebook.
And people just caught, that's the beauty of the hashtag, right? It's kind of like a
so fire. So I created on, using Canva, this image saying Moms Can Code, and I posted it in a local moms group. And had over 100 likes, and the comments kept flowing. And then mm-hmm. I posted it somewhere else, and same thing happened. And there's, that was June 16th. And August 3rd, we launched, and now we're here today. Yeah.
So, what were you doing before this? I mean, did you take some time off when you had your kids? I mean, what kind of gave you this idea?
So, I've had a lot of, done a lot of things, I've been at home in spurts, right? And I think that's a lot of women's stories after you have kids. The cost of childcare, schedules, mm-hmm. there's everyone has a different path. And mine was I was at home, and then I had gone to school for cytotechnology, mm-hmm. and then decided to stay at home again. Started Science Talks, which is a 501c3 nonprofit. And then I found myself wanting to learn a new skill and didn't know even where to start. So I found that other women were feeling the same way, because there's a lot out there right now about everyone should learn how to code, and they didn't know where to start either. So it's been really cool.
Yeah, so I mean, explain a little bit about that. I mean, the reception of this, because it's been such a short amount of time.
Yes.
Would you say that this was a business that formed out of like an idea, like when you talk about the hashtag and that becoming something else?
Yeah.
It's almost like the business was built out of the idea of the hashtag.
Absolutely.
How did you develop that out, and how have people responded to that?
It's a great hashtag, by the way.
Thank you. Absolutely is. So it's my busy season for Science Tots. We do non-science festivals, and I bring STEAM activities. And we, you know, this is my busy season, so I had no intentions of starting a full-fledged business in the summertime.
Yeah.
I just quickly realized that there was an interest, and I wanted to, help other women who... So what initially happened is I started getting emails saying, I really resonate with this. I'm feeling this way. This is my situation. Do you think you can help me? Mm-hmm. And those emails started coming in, and then other women were sharing their story about how they started a tech company, or, you know, why they started to learn how to code, or what they were looking for. And it really touched me, and I felt, okay, I have the ability to do something. Let's do it. Mm-hmm. And that's how this was all. It all just happened very quickly.
In between the nap time and the feeding time this is the thing when you're, you know, parents, especially new parents, it's like you have these little kind of pieces of time in your day where you're not doing anything, but your kid is there kind of in the other room, either sleeping or, you know, just quiet. And you're like, okay, I'll just enjoy this for a minute.
And then that's when something bad's happening, right?
When it's completely quiet.
It depends. When they're little, when they're super little, not really. But when they're older and they're quiet, it's like, okay, now this has been quiet for too long. So what kind of, once you have this up and running now, like what kind of resources do you have for people? Like, how do I get started if I want to do this, if I was a mom?
First and foremost, the hashtag. First and foremost, the hashtag. So just having, sharing what's happening to you that day and having people respond. I think that, the camaraderie that, we already see women exhibiting, and the support that we share towards one another, even just through Twitter, is so magnificent. If you follow the hashtag, you can see women saying, wow, that's great, or I checked out your portfolio and you're doing a great job. Keep up the great work. Or women sharing their stories about how, it's nap time, ready to code, or I'm not understanding this, and I just, need some support, and someone will say, well, I can help you. Mm-hmm. So I think first and foremost, just, using social media to connect has been amazing. The next way that we support them is through membership. So we offer online resources that are created by the moms and our guests. So that's been really fascinating, because they're creating content for one another. So there's no BS. Can I say that?
You can say anything.
There's no BS.
As long as the chat room approves, you can say anything here.
they're coming from, the career insights, what's worked for me and what might work for you is coming from another mom. So there's no BS. And then the other cool thing that we do are in-person meetups, and online we also do face-to-face video chats. So we check in with one another, with kids running around in the background. Who cares?
So it's always like that BBC spot?
Yeah, right.
The kid ran, and you're like, we've dealt with that plenty of times.
Yeah, and we don't care. We're just checking in with one another. And then recently, just the last two weekends, we've done two tech, very intro tech skills workshops in Pittsburgh, and they've been a great success. We've had moms come, women who were interested in learning how to code, and we've also even had men come who are men in tech to support and be TAs of the classes. So it's been really awesome to see not just moms rally around each other, but a whole community of people who support this movement and women in tech.
Yeah, absolutely. And now, obviously, with everybody contributing content, contributing these services and support, so there's the community aspect, the community sharing aspect. But I also noticed that there's a commission based aspect to this as well. Explain that.
So there's a small monthly membership fee, $5 a month, so Starbucks coffee. Mm-hmm. And when someone creates content for the platform, they're eligible to become an affiliate. So anyone that they refer to that becomes a member, they will receive a commission from that monthly fee every single month.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
So where does this all go? I mean, what are people going to do with all this? You know, yeah. Have you already seen some success stories, or is the goal to code something yourself or to get a job, or what's kind of the end game for this?
So anything you want it to be. So I'm one of the women tech makers, Udacity scholars. For me, I'm not looking to pursue a coding job, but I'm interested in learning. So this year, my goal is to complete that program. And it's an Android basics program, so already I'm learning how to make an app. So I'm proud to show that and say that I've completed this. I mean, how many of us, set resolutions in January and actually follow through with something? I think that that's really what this is about, right? Making the commitment to learn something new and making steps in progress to learn. And if you finish it, fantastic.
Okay.
I am so proud of you. We do have women who have already, just since they've joined the group, what it's helped them do is gain the courage to apply for that job. And we're cheering them on. They're sharing their portfolios with us. Or, I just got this job and I created this website. What do you think? So already we're seeing those steps. And if that's where you want to take it, we're here to support you. If you're just wanting to learn, you have done a great thing by just, at the beginning of the year, you're saying you're going to go to the gym. We're going to applaud you when you take that coding class. Every little step of the way counts. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't say that at the beginning of the year. I say that every day, and it never
happens.
It doesn't have to be the beginning of the year. So I like this. So really what you're doing is you're saying, to these women who are having kids, and you're it's like, it's not a waste of time, but you're saying like, hey, look, you're going to be home. You're going to have these little kind of maybe some in-between time where you might feel like you're falling back because you left your job, or you're kind of like at a time where you just feel good knowing that you're still accomplishing something professionally while you're also raising these kids that at the time seem like a crazy deal, but eventually they all work out, right?
Yeah. And one mom shared something really special with us, that she took up coding because she really enjoyed how it is trial and error, and it requires a lot of persistence, and it's much like parenting. So every little success made her feel better about her day. So it helped her see those small successes throughout the day when, she was having trouble with her son. Like, he was a fussy baby. Maybe, he didn't, nap, or he didn't take a bottle, or, didn't latch on that day. She learned to see every little success with her son the way that she saw it with coding. Okay. It's working. It's green. Great.
And it's probably got to feel good to kind of have a different distraction, for lack of a better word, something to kind of point your attention towards at a time or at a moment where life can be really frustrating going.
It can
through
be emotionally
some of these things. It's really
frustrating.
Nice to get distracted.
Yeah, yeah. And now there's so many cool apps. You can do this anywhere. It doesn't have to be through a boot camp or a computer science degree. There are a lot of free resources out there. So we help by word of mouth and, speaking to one another, share those resources. Yeah.
Cool. All right. How can someone get involved?
Go to momscancode.com. We have all of the information up there. As far, we have our upcoming meetups on there. We have who to email if you want to share your personal story or share a coworker's story, someone who's inspired you. We also have the membership tab where you can click and go to become a member. And once we have your information, we'll invite you to our Facebook group and, reach out to you.
Nice. Yeah. Actually, one question about the kids. Like, I'm sure kids of all ages of moms who are signing up for this. Are kids getting involved? Like, are kids interested in, like, they see mom learning how to code really cool stuff? How do they get involved?
I know that from my own personal... I wanted to learn how to code because my son is interested in coding, and he's 5. I mean, he loves it. We, in Pittsburgh, there are a lot of events at tech companies, and I have taken him with me, and he recognizes this is where the coders do their job, and he understands that what he's playing on his phone has been created by someone who works at this company. And for him to make that connection, that's really awesome. So I feel that if they see you learning something new, making an attempt to, gain a new skill, surely they're going to become interested in it. And they're learning it in school now.
Oh, yeah, right.
It's happening.
Right. And they're very exposed to to this on a regular basis. You know, more and more kids, younger and younger, are being exposed to screens, being exposed to apps and how they work and everything. Yeah. Once you connect the thing that they enjoy doing on a screen with the fact that it's possible to also make those things. That's a really powerful connection.
And that mommy can make that.
Yeah, right.
How cool is that?
Yeah, it's super cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, awesome work that you're doing. Erica Peterson, founder of Moms Can Code. And then also, what was the other site that you mentioned? Science Tots.
Mm-hmm.
Real quick before we go.
Science Tots is a 501c3 nonprofit, and we go to non-science festivals and set up these big, huge tents and have science activities for the families to do together. So we focus on ages 3 to 9. Nice. And the most recent event that we had was in Pittsburgh, the Pittsburgh Vintage Grand Prix. And we were sponsored by the neighborhood Ford store. So that was, you know, a really awesome experience for us. We had a 40 by 20 foot tent. We had awesome games where the children could code or, you know, look at body systems. And they were playing with robots and doing all sorts of fun stuff. So it's exciting to offer that for free at a venue where you don't expect to do a STEAM activity.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also cool to break down those barriers maybe or misconceptions that, you know, you developed when you were in high school. Maybe you didn't like math or science and you try this new thing out, and it's refreshing and it's new. And, you know, when your child goes to school, you know, whatever feelings you have about it, we've broken that down. Yeah.
I was a nerd, so I liked math and science, and I didn't like the sports, so don't know where that left me, but yeah.
Although I see what kids have access to now, you know, as far as experiences like that.
Yeah.
And it makes me wish I had that when I was a kid, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I was able to go to the computer camp. I went to a computer camp when I was a kid. That was about as connected to that as I was able to do before getting my own computer. There wasn't a whole lot of awareness around, you know, like kids just... No. You just didn't think, I'm a kid, I should learn how to program. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I don't, you know, it's just a fun thing for them to do. They don't know that they're being, you know, revolutionary right now. They're just having fun and being kids. And I think if we can approach it that way, cool.
Yeah, we had like the computer like bus that would come to our school. You know, you get on for like an hour and then get you off and that's it. It's like once a week and that, you know.
That sounds awesome.
Public school.
Yeah.
Very cool. Erica, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you, guys.
That you're working on. Really cool stuff. All right. We've got a lot to talk about here. But before we do, we're going to thank the sponsor of today's episode of Screensavers. And that is, well, it's a name you're very familiar with, WordPress. WordPress all over the web. We've interacted with WordPress time and time again. We know that building something new, something that others can connect with, is a lot easier when you have the right tools. And it's not always easy to find the right tools. But that's why we're excited to have WordPress.com as a sponsor. We use WordPress.com every day. And, you know, let me tell you, whether you're looking to create a personal blog, a business site, or both, creating your website on WordPress.com helps others find you, remember you, and connect with you. You don't need experience. You don't need to hire someone. WordPress.com guides you through the entire process so that you can do it yourself. They have hundreds of beautiful designs to choose from. You're going to get built-in search engine optimization and social sharing. They have a business plan that lets you access hundreds of plugins and themes, and that expands the capabilities of your WordPress site immensely. You can choose a WordPress.com plan, and then you'll join a lively community where you'll have access to expert-friendly support at any time. Come see why 28% of all websites, 28%, run on WordPress, the web's most popular and most powerful site-building platform. Get started today with 15% off any new plan purchase. Go to wordpress.com/NSS. You'll create your website, and you can find the plan that's right for you. That's wordpress.com/NSS for 15% off your brand new website. And we thank WordPress for their support of the new Screensavers and Twit. All right, so coming up, we're going to talk to Carrie Rose about the new Nikon D850 DSLR. But first... Would you wear a body camera throughout the day? I once wore it wasn't a body camera. It was a face camera with Google Glass. That was a challenge. What if you could live stream from it? A body camera that you're wearing, you're live streaming from it. That's what Megan Maroney did. And she has this review of the front row camera.
Welcome to 2017, when spending less time tethered to your smartphone might mean wearing a live streaming camera around your neck. The Front Row camera is a wearable device that lets you share your life in real time. You can wear it around your neck with the included lanyard or pin it to your clothing. You can take photographs or video to save for later, or you can live stream straight to Twitter, YouTube, or Facebook. I had a lot more fun taking it out in story mode, which led to more interesting results and felt less intrusive from a privacy perspective. At heart, I'm a blogger, not a life logger. Setting up the Front Row was incredibly easy. I downloaded the app on my iPhone and then I paired the device. Then you just link it to wherever you want to live stream, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, or all three. You can also link it to your Dropbox account to back up your photos and videos. It even let me set up a security pattern to prevent all the creepy people I work with from ripping it off my neck and live streaming themselves to my Twitter account. The Front Row charges very quickly with the included USB-C cable with an adapter. It also comes with its own microfiber cloth for wiping the screen. The wearable is good looking, although I would be more comfortable wearing it if it were a little bit smaller. The boxy design of a similar device called the Narrative Clip never looked very good on me. And let's face it, strapping a GoPro to your forehead isn't a good look for anyone. Although I do have some complaints about the size of the Front Row, the large size comes in handy with its beautiful screen. The device is running on Android, and you can easily scroll through options without having to open up the app on your phone. You can navigate on the screen, or you can just use the side buttons. To turn it on and off, you press the large button. To take a picture, you press the red button once. To start taking a video, you hold down the red button. If you'd prefer to use your phone to navigate the device, you can. The Front Row has a main 8-megapixel camera with a 148-degree field of view and another 5-megapixel camera on the back with a smaller field of view. The device comes with 2 gigabytes of RAM and 32 gigabytes of storage. It also has a few extra seemingly unrelated features like a stopwatch and a digital language translator. I guess if you are on your trips, you can time them and you can also find out how to say, "Am I invading your privacy by recording you without asking?" in any language. Let's take a look at the settings of the device. You can change the video resolution to record at 480p, 720p, 1080p, 2.7K, or 4K, which is still in beta. I enjoyed using the story mode, which takes a picture every 10 seconds or every 5 seconds or every minute and just shows you what your day looked like. And you can decide if you want to shoot at wide angle or not. Once you're done shooting photographs, videos, or a story, you can look at them on the device or on your phone. You can stream or download the video. You can also edit it on your phone and add some jaunty music or speed up the video. You can even add stickers. I don't want to be ageist or anything, but I do feel like the Front Row camera might appeal more to the younger people. Dare I say millennials, who are more comfortable constantly sharing their stories through Snapchat or Instagram. Here are the pros and cons. Pros: if I am wearing a camera around my neck that I know is shooting a picture every 30 seconds, I can live in the moment and leave my iPhone in the car or in my pocket while I experience nature with my eyeballs, theoretically. It is sturdy. I took it on a hike. It knocked against the side of a cave with no scratches or dents. Also, it is a fun device. I recorded my day in the city and on a hike in Petaluma. I even set it to music, which would be a great gift if you used the device at a birthday party or a wedding or some other celebration. I've seen devices like this that will just live stream to YouTube or just to Facebook or just to Twitter. Front Row gives you options to live stream almost everywhere, or you just keep your media on your device. Here are the cons. It costs $400. Wah, wah. That is a lot to pay for a device that is very similar to the phone that you're carrying around in your pocket. It's also a little clunkier than I would have liked. That gives me a little more screen real estate and makes it more obvious that I'm recording you, but it's not exactly my style. And finally, if you watch our show regularly, you know that I'm in the midst of a digital cleanse, #digital cleanse, so creating still images every 10 seconds isn't exactly a cleansing experience. It is hard not to think about how much media we're adding to the giant virtual pile that someone is going to have to sort through someday. If you are someone who loves sharing his or her life in Instagram stories or on Snapchat, this will definitely up your game. The battery life is excellent and the device charges fast. Front Row comes from the mesh wireless networking company Ubiquiti Networks, and it comes in black and rose gold. I am Megan Maroney, and I host iOS Today every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific. And check out next week for the next installment of The Digital Cleanse.
Absolutely. Not very cleansing, though, when you're recording every single minute of the day.
No, man. I feel bad when I take a burst shot. I'm like, what am I going to do? I'm never going to go through 100 pictures.
What am I going to do with all this stuff? I'm thinking what they need to do, they need to come out with, like, a baseball hat that you can mount it into so that it's not always hanging around here and bouncing around. Then it's a little more stabilized, but then you're wearing that in your hat.
Yeah, so. I think that it's perfect for coaches, you know, because it looks like a stopwatch. Yeah. They even had the stopwatch functionality.
Totally.
So it's like stopwatch, you know, camera, I don't know.
Although $400.
$400, she lost me at that. That's a lot of money for a device like that I just don't know what my use case would be.
Yeah, that was basically the point of the review where we probably should have heard like a record scratch. Like a brrrr. Yeah, that's it.
Great review.
I mean, hey, if you have to record and stream every single moment of your life, there aren't a whole lot of options, right?
No.
You're going to pay $400
if you
have to.
Actually, you know what? Delivery room. Perfect.
Anywho, so Carrie Rose is joining us from DP Review to help us review the Nikon D850 DSLR. Before we get to that, though, Carrie, have you seen the Front Row? I mean, you're a camera guy. Does the Front Row check any boxes in your list?
You know you want one.
I mean, it's smaller than this, I suppose. If I had this kind of swinging around here, this is a little bit more conspicuous. I don't know if I could life log with this. I don't know if I could life log, period, but I would definitely life log with a Front Row over a DSLR.
Put a holster on that.
Understood. Yeah, exactly. So Carrie, thank you so much for hopping on and telling us your thoughts. I was reading up a little bit about Nikon's full-frame DSLR, the D850, and some of the reviews I saw said this is the best camera that Nikon has. Would you agree with that?
I would mostly agree with that, yeah, because my previous kind of favorite Nikon camera was, of course, the D5. How can you say no to, you know, a $6,500 flagship that you could literally hammer nails if you need to? Mm-hmm. But for about half that cost, you get, honestly, a lot of D5 features in this, and it's just going to tick a lot of boxes for a lot of people, to be honest.
Nice. No life logging, though, so that's, you know, not checked off. But what are some of the specs? What are some of the things that really impress you about it from a technical spec standpoint?
Sure. So this is one of the highest resolution megapixel DSLRs you can get. It's got a all new 46 megapixel sensor, and it shoots at 7 frames a second, and that's a lot of megapixels every second. If you add a battery grip on the bottom with the battery from one of those D5 cameras, you get up to 9 frames a second. It now shoots 4K video from the full width of the sensor, which means you don't get a weird, funky crop. It's got great battery life. It's got that autofocus system from the D5. So, I mean, again, like kind of half the price of their flagship, you're getting the autofocus capability of the flagship, which is what a lot of people buy a flagship camera for.
What are you not getting? So if it's, you know, it's half the price, I mean, it mm-hmm. seems like a nice deal. What are you not getting compared to the flagship?
You're not getting – one of the things they did improve with this camera is the battery life is very good, but you get a huge battery with one of those flagship cameras. So you can shoot for, you know, 4,000 or 5,000, 6,000 burst shots on a charge. This you'll probably get 2 or 3, which is – that's still a lot of 46 megapixel photos. And one of the other things you're not going to get – I mean, we don't torture test cameras at DP Review, unfortunately. I think it'd be probably great for our page views if we did. This is probably not quite as durable as a Nikon D5 as well.
Okay. And how is it different than what Nikon has? I mean, other than the flagship, I mean, how is this unique or different or kind of push it a little bit for them?
Well, basically what it seems to have done is they have thrown a lot of their eggs into this basket is what it seems like. So they had the D810 before, which is their previous high megapixel camera. It was 36 megapixels. It took 5 frames a second. Then there's the D5, which is their sports shooting camera, so they took the autofocus from that. And they've redesigned a lot of the ergonomics, and there's particularly the grip is really, really nice on this camera. This is not by any means a small camera or necessarily a very light camera, but they've redesigned the grip from kind of the Nikon D750. That was kind of their first of slimming down and kind of deepening these grips. And that's made a real noticeable difference for me in my shooting with this camera, that this is not a camera I mind having with me because it's just so comfortable to hold despite the fact that it's pretty big.
I was going to say that's a comparison to other Nikon cameras. What about right. just other DSLRs in general, how does it compare to others?
Well, a lot of cameras, even these days, you're going to basically be choosing between speed and resolution. And that's been true of previous Nikon cameras. That's true of, you know, the nearest camera in resolution terms to the DA50 is it's called a Canon 5DS or 5DSR. Those are 50 megapixels. They're around the same size. They're a little heavier, and they shoot much more slowly. They don't have a sophisticated autofocus system. I don't believe they shoot 4K video either. So this, yeah, it's really going to go down as one of their most well-rounded cameras ever, until they figure out how to do that with the next one.
And what have you shot on this? What have you shot so far with this camera, and kind of where does it excel? Where can you see some improvements, and sort of who do you recommend it for? Like, what use case do you use this for?
Sure. So that's what was kind of interesting. And so the gallery you're looking at right now is mostly from, full disclosure, a Nikon press trip where we got to go down to Bend, Oregon, to shoot a whole ton of things with this camera. So we did everything from night sky, astrophotography. We did, you know, tripod, sunrise, landscape work. We had a fake engagement shoot with some models that they look like they're in love. They just met.
That's fantastic. Great models. Are these your pictures? You took these?
I did. Okay. I did take all of these.
They're great.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And we also did plenty of kind of peak action stuff too. So we did a lot of motocross, and we also did whitewater kayaking. And the night actually I got back from this trip, I went out and shot my friend's wedding, and then the night after that shot his wedding ceremony. And it honestly did great for all of them. I didn't have a lot of complaints. I expected to be pretty stressed out about trying to get the max out of that 46 megapixels of resolution.
Wow.
And if you are trying to get the max out of that resolution, you do have to be pretty careful with the camera. But this is so much resolution, I'm never going to be handing – I mean, you know, unless I'm going to make a big wall print, most people don't know what to do with that sort of resolution anyway if I was handing it off to a client. So, and even that's pretty good for 46 megapixels on a moving subject.
It's funny. You don't realize, you know, because we take so many smartphone pictures these days, you don't realize you're always looking at them on that tiny screen.
And you're like, oh, it looks so great.
Looks so amazing. The first time I ever went through my house and printed out pictures for frames is when I realized all the pictures I've been taking on my smartphone are terrible.
Yeah.
Because when you print them out, they look terrible. But that, zooming in on the back of that motorcycle, I mean, it's truly impressive.
Oh,
and
yeah,
this is really
so
where
detail.
The DSLRs excel. Especially
absolutely.
Capturing things like this.
Absolutely. It's crazy how much like you just keep zooming and keep zooming and keep zooming. And the autofocus system, people were kind of questioning, the D5 that it's taken from is only 20 megapixels. And so people were wondering if this could keep up with a super high resolution sensor. And, you know, you do have to be kind of careful, and it will have like very slight misfocus sometimes. But the vast majority of shots that I got were just great, and were eminently usable for anything you could think of.
So price-wise, this is what, you know, $400 or $500, totally low scale, or actually, how much does it cost?
Unfortunately, it's not going to compete with the front row. This is $3,299, $3,300.
Wow.
But okay. At that price point, it is undercutting. I mean, their direct competitor is a Canon 5D Mark IV. It's undercutting that price by a couple hundred dollars, which is impressive to see. And these things, you know, they will drop over time. And I'm always a fan of buying good quality used gear, you know, to be smart about buying used gear. But it's really this, we say this every so often when a camera like this comes around, this could be the last camera you buy. And
I've heard that before with every gadget I buy. This will be the last thing you ever need. What other camera are people comparing this to? And kind of give us, can you do that? I mean, if I'm shopping for this one, it's like this versus this. And kind of what's the deal?
Absolutely. So the kind of the similar cameras. So there's that the Canon 5DSR is the super high megapixel Canon camera. It doesn't have the dynamic range that the DA50 has. So if you're shooting a really high contrast scene, you'll get better results with this. If you're like a, you know, dark foreground in a sunrise or a sunset. There's also the Sony A7 R2, which is a fantastic camera. I've used it a ton. It's obviously way smaller than this. It's a mirrorless full frame camera with 42 megapixels. That camera tops out at 5 frames a second. It's got a great autofocus system as well, but this is going to be better for shooting fast action. And then, this is an interesting blend of the sports cameras like a Sony A9, which shoots an insane 20 frames a second. But again, you won't get the same dynamic range, and you won't quite have the same debatable autofocus performance as this camera. We still think and find that the Nikon D5 is an autofocus standard. The A9 is incredible. Very, very close for a mirrorless camera, but it seems like kind of the realm of really high-end sports action photography is still tilting in the direction of the DSLR, but, you know, time will tell if that starts to shift again.
Is this even available right now, or it's just pre-order at this point? When can people get their hands on it? I mean, obviously by the holidays, right?
Yeah, so the nice thing, nice thing for Nikon is that they sold way more than they expected. So I think there's a little bit of a backlog right now. They were supposed to be shipping this month. This is a full retail model that they were able to loan to us. So by the time the holidays roll around, you should absolutely be able to get your hands on one.
It sounds like you really like this thing. Like, it sounds like you kind of would use this camera.
I would, absolutely. One of the things as a camera reviewer we are privileged with being able to do is get our hands on all the new gear. I have to be able to review every brand. I have to know how every brand of camera works. Before I was doing camera reviews, I was a full-time photographer using Nikon gear. And I have an old Nikon D700 that, when I bought it, was the last DSLR I'd ever need, the last camera I'd ever need. And I'm starting to look long and hard at this, and maybe this is that next last camera.
The longer it's standing next to you, the harder it is to let go of it.
Most Absolutely. Importantly, did she say yes at the shoot?
At the wedding, yes. The models, there was some chemistry with the models for the fake engagements. But time will tell. I've got their emails. I'll be checking in.
Yeah, you'll have to check in on those. So if you had to summarize kind of like pros, cons, the things you like the most, like the main reason why someone gets this versus, you know, maybe the main reason why someone might stay away, what would you say?
Sure. I would say this is a great camera for someone who is a well-rounded photographer and needs a well-rounded camera to do lots of different stuff. You might be doing sports one day, you might be doing a landscape the next, you might be doing events. This camera will basically do it all. However, if you really don't need the 46 megapixels, there are other cameras out there that will do a lot of what this camera does for a lower price for you. And there's no denying it, even if you up the compression rates on the inside of this camera, 46 megapixels eats up a lot of disk space. Beyond that, there are full-frame mirrorless cameras that will offer, again, like an A7 R2 offers very similar image quality in a much smaller size. But you get also with the DSLR, you generally tend to get better battery life. So there's always ups and downs. There's always a mixed bag. It really depends on your priorities, whether you're looking for portability, or, you know, speed, ruggedness. This is a good all-around camera for almost anything I can think of, so long as you can stomach the large file sizes.
How big are those file sizes, and what kind of like memory card do you use for this?
Actually, that's a good point. Unfortunately for Nikon, I think they're the only manufacturer that uses these. XQD card. This is very, very fast memory card.
Seems very proprietary.
It is very proprietary. They're coming down in price, but it's amazing because once you shoot a burst and you're done, they're already written to the card. It's that fast.
Wow.
But these 46 megapixel files, if you're shooting lossless compression, and it's called a 14-bit file, so that's the most information you can get without losing a whole ton, those files weigh in around 50 megabytes a piece. If you do full uncompressed, you're looking at around 100.
Impressive.
And the JPEGs, the full quality JPEGs right out of the camera, are between like 15 and 20 megabytes. So they're big. You can always downsize them. You can shoot in medium RAW and small RAW, or medium JPEG and small JPEG. But you're kind of losing some of the point of this camera.
Yeah. All right. So sounds like a winner for most all around photographers, anyways. And
absolutely.
I think the jury's still out on whether that ends up getting sent back slowly or quickly.
Right. How many loan extensions can we get?
Dang! I missed the post again. Why did I do that? Sorry, it's going to be another 2 weeks.
That's right.
That's awesome. Carrie Rose from dpreview.com with the Nikon D850. Carrie, thank you so much for taking time to talk with us about this.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, now we know what we have to get.
I never wanted a DSLR. Now I'm like,
right?
I want this thing. I mean, and no, I'm not spending $3,500 on a camera.
But if you do, let us know. Maybe on know-how, we can jerry-rig a thing so that you can wear it around your neck and life cast all the time.
I feel like I need a $3,500 camera just to take a picture every 10 seconds. I'm going to be burning through those memory cards.
Exactly, and you can frame them when you're done.
That's the beauty of it. They will work. Yeah. No, it seemed like a really nice camera. He was a little, smitten with it, I think.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
That's rare for those. I mean, it takes a lot. When you're reviewing cameras every day, it takes a lot to have that kind of excitement for a new device.
Yeah.
And he definitely had it. So yeah. I think that one seems like a winner.
Although I will say, probably like 2 or 3 years ago, I bought for my wife, for Christmas, I bought her a DSLR. because we're like, okay, well, we have kids now, so we want to take really great pictures. We never use that thing just because it's so outside of our habit, our ritual, right? We always have our smartphone. If we're going to an event, it seems way more cumbersome to bring the big case with the big camera and have it at the ready. It's just not part of our routine.
Funny you bring this up, because I actually think I have a theory on this. With the Apple Watch Cellular, I actually think it's going to bring back more cameras, like a DSLR. Because imagine you have an Apple Watch with LTE on your wrist, and you know you can get your phone calls and you can be connected. You go to your kid's recital. For me, every time I go to like a my kid's recital or whatever, I'm always like, I don't want to bring more stuff. I don't want to bring my good camera because I have my phone. You know what I mean? I just don't want to hold more things. So imagine you have the watch where you know you're going to be connected. You can make a phone call. Now you're like, I'll bring my good camera because... I can't.
So I've got my phone on my wrist. I've got my camera.
So I'm just saying, I think it's a good thing for these companies that make these big cameras that we may see a little bit more interest in them because people will pick up a second device and use it instead of their iPhone or their Android because they can.
Yeah, interesting.
It's just a little theory I'm working on.
I like the theory. We'll see. History will tell.
Don't sell your camera on eBay just yet.
No, I'm not. I'm not. It's going to stay hung up for years. It was expensive. all right, it's time for a call for help. All right, Joe from Shawnee, Kansas, is on the line. I believe we have Joe on the line anyways.
Hi, guys. I agree with Leo and that most people, all they really need is a Chromebook. So I'm planning to pick up a Samsung Pro or Plus, depending on what I see next time it goes on sale. My big struggle is figuring out a plan around 3-2-1 backup, with photos being the main concern with kids. I'm a Google Drive customer with Google Fiber, so I have a free terabyte, so I'm covered there, and also through Amazon Prime Photos. I have great offline backup options, but what would you recommend as far as a local copy? I'm looking for something that doesn't break the bank, hoping I can recommend that to friends also when they kind of simplify their life. Ideally, it would grab Google Drive and back that up locally for me, but I'm open to where our phones or other devices are backing up to that other option directly. Thanks, and look forward to hearing the answer.
This is a tall order. This is a challenging one. The not break the bank.
That's
aspect
the tough part.
Of this is the hard part.
But I like that he is doing this because that's the thing. We all talk about backing up and doing it, but reality is, it's like not most of us are not very organized. So I'm glad that he's actually taking the steps to get organized.
Yeah, and most of us don't actually take backup seriously until it's too late and we realize why we should have taken backup seriously. 3-2-1 backup basically says three copies of data. That's one original and two backups, two different storage types, and one that's offsite.
Okay.
So it's a kind of a multiple point rule that ensures that if one of those points goes down for a number of different reasons, you're backed up in other ways, and you'll never actually truly, or it would be very difficult to truly lose all
that data. Never say never.
Exactly. Don't say never when it comes to security and losing your data and all that kind of stuff. Not breaking the bank with this kind of multi-device requirement, the fact that it's automatic, the fact that it's pulling from the cloud to back up the photos from Google Drive. I mean,
there's a lot going on here.
Yeah, the obvious answer, I believe, and I checked in with Father Robert on this too, because I knew that he'd have some insight, it would be Synology. The problem is Synology is not inexpensive. You have a Synology.
I have a Synology. I've had it, for a couple of years now, and it's simple. I've got the cheapest one. It's like, I think it was $200.
Okay.
It might have been two. Then you have to buy hard drives for it. It's sort of a RAID setup. So I'll be honest, I actually only have one drive in there, so my RAID is not complete. So if something did happen...
Better than no drives.
It's better than no drives. So, yeah. Wait, you have to put a drive in this thing?
Right.
That would be really bad. I've got the drive in there. And the best part about Synology is really the software. Like he said, he wants to back up Google Drive. That's not easy to do.
Yeah.
But Synology software actually lets you link up with Google Drive, and it will download your entire drive to Synology and sync it.
Yep.
So I have mine synced at all times, and I've got my photos that go from Google Photos onto Google Drive, obviously, and then boom, right into my Synology. And the Synology offers other things too. You can use it to stream movies. I mean, it's like your own personal server at your house.
Right.
So that's pretty cool. But yeah, it's really set it and forget it. Once you have it set up, so you've got your originals. Basically somewhere on your phone, I guess. And then you've got your backup in Google Photos and then a backup
Of the Google Photos.
Of the Google Photos. Yeah.
On your local.
That, that's the thing. This is what it really, this is the tough part, is that there's not really an easy solution. Once you upload your pictures to all these device things like Flickr and, you know, whether it's OneDrive or whatever, whoever you, or iCloud, there's no easy way to get them back necessarily, you know, because you have to sit at your laptop, let's say, and like let it download, unless you have internet like here. But most of us at home, you know, we have slow internet or slower. So it's tough to get that big copy to like offload somewhere else. Or even, you know, let's say you just wanted to download it once a month, you know, just go to Google Drive and say, let me just download my whole Google Drive to an external drive. Not easy.
Well, yeah, and you're especially when you consider it. like with Google Photos, and I know this, it's this way on my Pixel, is that when I'm out and about and I take a bunch of photos, it can back up to the cloud automatically, and then it can free up space. Like, you know, I could choose to delete that. So by the time I get home, it's not there to do a local backup. It's already in the cloud, off the device, and now the only copy of it that exists is in the cloud.
And that's sort of happening with iPhone, too, because they optimize your photos on your phone. Once they go up to iCloud, if you're running out of space, it'll automatically delete the original.
Right.
You still see it on your phone, so it looks like you have it there, but when you go to click on it, it'll kind of pull that from the cloud. So same thing. Mm-hmm. Used to be, you know, you plugged your phone into, you know, iTunes, and it would get everything all at once. That's not really happening anymore because these the way we're managing our online photo collection. Yeah. It's a really complicated thing. I mean, I don't really know of another way other than the Synology to do that. I tried looking at something like a Western Digital Drive, you know, where they have like that My Cloud or whatever, but I didn't really find the two-way syncing. There's a little website. There's a third-party app I can't remember the name of, so I'm really helping you guys out here. But it's like iSync or something like that, but I tried that as well, and it seemed to work pretty well with Google Drive. Okay. But again, you have to have it, you know, a drive plugged into your computer.
Right. It's got to, it's not connecting directly to Drive in the cloud. It's connecting to Drive or some sort of drive that you have synced to your computer locally.
Which is
because you can do that through, you know, Google's own tool. You can have a drive backed up locally exactly as it's done. If you set that as a backup point to a local drive, that's another way to do it.
Oh, there it is. InSync. There it is. See the smart people we have around here?
That's right.
InSync. So actually, this one was pretty cool. The only problem is by the time I, you know, you can pause the download, but like to get everything from the, I have like, you know, almost a terabyte in Google Drive as well. And to try to get that downloaded to a hard drive on your computer, I was sitting there like leaving my laptop on overnight and like all this stuff. Whereas Synology, it's just always on because it's a little server. It's always connected. It's just kind of sitting in your, you know, under your
desk.
It's
not something you're using for something else. It's just there always churning on just that thing.
Exactly.
And they have plugins for all sorts of other things. OneDrive, Amazon S3, Dropbox. So Synology really offers, I think, all of the things that you're looking for, except for the cost, which it's going to cost you to do that. But hey, it's backup, right? And backup's worth it.
I agree. And it's such a simple solution that once you pay that, you know, initial fee, you know, really, and you get a terabyte free of Google Drive, which you're saving $10 a month, by the way.
Yeah, that's good.
So, I mean, it's kind of nice that you're, you know, imagine that. It's $120 a year that you're saving.
Shave that off.
See, so, this is what I'm talking about.
You would have been paying that otherwise, so consider that a discount.
All of us that are paying that, it's like, come on. I mean.
Yeah, and Father Robert did also recommend something else, the Kingston Digital Mobile Lite. So that supports Google Play, iOS, Windows via SMB Share, but it's not automatic, he said. It requires some user interaction for backups. That's $70. I just don't think that you're going to get exactly what you're looking for with something like that. But if it's truly the case where you have to save some money, maybe look into that. You're just going to be happiest with Synology.
I agree. It's like the more you spend, the less work you have to think about. Right. Kind of with that, you're going to have to be plugging that in all the time.
Not to mention, they also always say, once you lose your data and you realize how expensive it is to get it back, you wish you would have gone back in time and just paid the money that was required. So hopefully that helps. Hopefully you can do that. And happy Synology-ing. Next week, Leo is going to be back, and Megan Maroney is going to be the co-host here. If you want them to answer your tech question, they can do that. Here's how.
Need tech help? The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
All right, we have more of your questions to answer here shortly. But before we do that, we have to take a quick break and thank the sponsor of this episode of the new Screensavers, and that is Qualcomm. We talk about Qualcomm products on the show all the time because they're powering a lot of the devices that we talk about every day
Qualcomm Snapdragon Gigabit LTE is just one of their products. You can stream and download what you want, when you want, at maximum speed. And let's be honest, that's what we always want when we're on the internet. Snapdragon Gigabit LTE was designed to deliver the fastest mobile connectivity and help speed things up in crowded places. With additional lanes for your data to flow on and the ability to squeeze more speed from each LTE connection, Snapdragon Gigabit LTE is like driving on a much wider, a much faster data highway. Average LTE download speeds are up to 7 times faster than typical home Wi-Fi. You will notice the difference. It can turbocharge all of your connected apps. You can download the latest game from the Play Store on the go, perhaps faster than you could even do that over your Wi-Fi connection at home, which is pretty impressive. You can access all of your files in the cloud nearly as fast as you would if they were stored on your phone. That's like the ultimate dream of cloud computing, is that the cloud drive is just as fast as your local, so you don't even know the difference. Load Android Instant apps almost instantly. That's why it's in the name. Snapdragon Gigabit LTE technology uses the network much more efficiently, so you'll be leaving plenty of room on the network for others to make the most of their data plans as well. Make the most of your unlimited data plan. To learn more about epic download speeds for all of your apps, all you have to do is visit snapdragon.com/gigabit. That's snapdragon.com/gigabit. And we thank Snapdragon for their support of the new screensavers. All right, the mailbag, we're going to get to that. Rich and I are going to hop over there in just a second. We're going to try and answer those questions. But first, Padre has some advice if you're looking to do IoT the right way on a budget.
The Internet of Things has promise. The idea of placing sensors all around the world is a data geek or control freak's dream. Unfortunately, over the past few years, the Internet of Things has built up a bit of a bad reputation. We call the Internet of Things the Internet of Hackable Things, or the Internet of Useless Things, and for good reason. So many IoT devices just aren't ready to be connected to the Internet, lest they be owned, and those of us who actually have good use cases for IoT may not have the skills to build our own device from the ground up. Luckily, there's hope in the form of Cayan. Cayan is a free service that lets you take your Raspberry Pi, Arduino, or other single-board computer and turn it into a full-featured IoT platform. The process is simple. Once you've created a free account, you log in and select a device that you want to IoT enable. For a device like this Raspberry Pi 2, just 2 commands in the terminal window will download and install the packages needed for Cayan to work. Once the devices are properly configured, they show up in the Cayan dashboard, and this is where it gets fun. Cayan is pre-configured to use dozens of sensors, actuators, microcontrollers, and even LoRa network gear to gather data about the world around your IoT device and then turn that into actions in the real world. For example, in this project, I've added 2 devices to a Raspberry Pi 2B. The first is an infrared motion detector. The second is a relay. Now, using the trigger screen, I can create an if-this-then-that scenario. In this case, I'm designing the project so that if the motion sensor is triggered, then the Pi will trigger the relay, which in this case is connected to a DC fan, but could just as easily be connected to a floodlight, fan, alarm, or pump. I've also set up a notification so that if the motion sensor is triggered, it will send a text message notifying me that there was motion detected and the relay triggered. Finally, the dashboard contains a button so that I can reset the relay once I've acknowledged the event. The beauty of Cayan is how easy it is to create IoT tasks, not just devices. Once I have a stable of Raspis and Arduinos, I can trigger events on one or more devices after receiving input on entirely different devices. I could have an Arduino at my family home in Las Vegas signal a Raspi in San Francisco to activate warning lights when the internal temperature rises too much. I could have a Raspi sniffing network traffic in Rome, triggering actions on an Arduino in New York when excessive data is sensed leaving the network. The best thing about the system is that it doesn't require me to open holes into my network. I don't have to create a security exploit in order to use the IoT. My devices, be they Raspberry Pis or Arduinos or ESPYs, communicate to the Cayan server. In turn, they can communicate with each other behind the security that Cayan has built. This means I can leverage their security to secure my Internet of Things. For the full primer on Cayenne-enabled IoT devices, watch episode 347 of Know How at twit.tv/KH. I'm Father Robert Ballasaire, the Digital Jesuit, for Twit TV.
Thank you, Father Robert Ballasaire, for that. Are you all in on IoT at home?
I have smart devices. Is that okay. Count? I
don't know. Like what?
I have like the Nest. I have Ring. I have Synology. I mean, I have a lot of.
Yeah, that counts.
Yeah.
I would say that counts.
But I don't really consider them Internet of Things. Like, I mean, I guess they are, but I don't have like a sensor on like my trash can when it needs to be like taken out. You know, it'll give me like a text to my phone.
Yeah.
Now that I think about it, though.
All right. It's time for the mailbag. This is where I'm going to almost get hit by a mailbox.
Oh. Whoa. Ah. Look at that.
Oh, you didn't hit me, mailbox. What's going on here? You had one job. Let's see what's in here. Oh, because they always leave a surprise. Is this surprise for Rich? Is it? Oh, congratulations. I don't know what this is, but I'm going to give it to you so you can take a look. And
should I open it away from my face?
Yeah.
Wow. This is... Talk about coming up to Petaluma. This is pretty nice. It's funny. I saw this on the map last night.
I can just open this right now. Yeah.
Wasn't that another show many years ago?
Man.
Probably can't.
You know what? I actually can't complain because I did a new screensavers not too long ago where we had the folks from Lagunitas in here.
Okay.
And we ended up with mountains of beer.
I was going to say, they don't come to the studio and not have it. This is unlimited unlimited release. This is their standard IPA, right?
That is the standard. Yeah. No, that's the standard IPA.
Very nice. And cap. Thank you.
Yeah, that's
Thank
a
you,
cap that
new
you can
screensaver
mount your camera into. Yeah, they work wonders.
Well, I was supposed to host the tech guy tomorrow, but I don't know.
I say you host the tech guy, you wear the hat, and you drink the
we'll
beer.
See
and
if
see
I'm
how
in
it goes.
Tomorrow morning.
Pick your poison.
Ooh, let's see
the other
here.
Poison, not just the beer poison. You want to go first?
Sure.
Go ahead and read that.
My question is, how do I get rid of my second Facebook account that I created a long time ago? Friends are requesting to be my friend at both accounts.
Okay.
I'd like to keep my life simple. Thank you, writes D.
D. All right. So, one thing I know about Facebook is that it's really hard to leave Facebook.
Yes. For many reasons.
I mean, there are a lot of people that are trying to delete their account. They realize it's next to impossible to actually delete it because of Facebook makes it difficult. Because they don't want you to go anywhere.
I remember trying to delete my account, and I remember seeing pictures of my friends. And I'm not kidding. It was like, if you go, Jane will miss you. And it was like a memory that Jane and I had. You know, I'm like, I don't even know who Jane is.
Slow motion push close up to Jane's face with a tear.
Did you like seeing, your friend Ron have his kid? Well, you'll miss that.
You'll miss that when Ron has another kid.
Yeah. I'm like, wait, Ron said he's not having any more kids. No.
They pour it on.
They really do, and for good reason. I mean, you know, Facebook is it's kind of a double-edged sword. You know, you want to have it because you feel connected, but then sometimes you're like, I'm spending too much time on this.
Right.
Get out of my life.
And in the case of D, right, it is D, D just has two accounts and doesn't want to confuse people. So it's maybe less of a... I need my time back and more of a, this is too confusing for other people.
Yeah, I think in her case, she probably wants to get rid of it because it's confusing and it makes sense. So but they still don't make it easy.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we do? What does D do?
Well, okay, so basically you have two options. One is you can deactivate the account that you're not using. That isn't deleting it entirely, but basically what that does is it makes your profile invisible on the network. Your data is still saved on Facebook servers. If you don't want to get rid of it entirely, you can deactivate, and that's not going to jettison all of your data into the cloud trash can.
Okay.
That may or may not exist. The other option is to permanently delete, and they have the option. You probably want to download your data. If you have any extra data there beforehand, you can go into Facebook, and you can download all of that data so you don't lose it entirely.
I've done this. So it downloads all your pictures. Everything is like a zip.
And how big is that?
It was big. It was. I probably still have it on my drive here on Google. But it was significant. And it takes a little bit for them to actually prepare it.
Yeah.
Let's see if I have my Facebook.
Usually offloading all of that data from these different services. Like sometimes it can take a day or two. And then you suddenly get an email that says, here's a link to click.
It actually worked better, though, when I tried to do it from Google. Uh-huh. Like, you know how they have Google Takeout?
Yeah.
And it actually worked pretty good. Like, you know, okay. It just said, like, in an hour or something, oh, here's all your stuff. Took a while to download, and then I downloaded it, and now, of course, I can't find it. So
that's okay.
I probably deleted it. Afterwards.
Like, I got all my data. It turns out I actually don't need it anyways. So once you download your data, if you go to Settings and then General and then Download a Copy of Facebook Data, there's a function there that says Download a Copy of Facebook Data. That's how you can download it. Then to delete, I just found the URL facebook.com/help/delete_account.
Oh, that sounds easy.
Because I don't know. I'm sure you can get to it through the menu. But any
probably
of the
not.
Looking up and kind of poking through and everything, they make it really difficult for you to find this. So, you know, short circuit that entirely. Go to facebook.com/help/delete_account.
Don't you
that
think
takes you to your delete account page.
It'd be easier if it was just facebook.com/delete, right? But they don't want
to
do that.
That's too easy for people to act on a whim and get rid of their account entirely.
I see both sides of this. I mean, you know, it's like you delete and you lose a lot of your connections to... There it is. See, that's... See?
Are you sure
you want to deactivate? That's what I'm talking about. Jason will miss you.
I will miss
Lainey
you.
Will miss
Anthony,
you.
I will miss you even though I work with you every day. I will miss you.
Now, do you think Facebook uses an algorithm to choose like the saddest looking picture of your friends where they're just like...
I am curious to know if it knows that you're at Twit right now because it put up my face. I'm sure... I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm sure you have a lot of people that you talk with more than me on Facebook.
That is
very strange.
I thought you're my best friend.
We are really good friends. Don't get me wrong. But family doesn't come before Jason.
That's awesome.
So they pour it on thick.
They pour it on thick. But here's the other thing. What happens if you're logging into websites with your... And I know this is not for Dee because she's, you know, she has two accounts. It's confusing.
Yeah.
But what if you use Facebook Connect for like... all your logins, what happens?
It goes definitely deeper, right? That's one thing that you have to pay attention to. And some of the tutorials that I saw recommend going into your connected apps page before deleting the account and going through them one by one and stripping them off of Facebook Connect. Some apps, some services only work through Facebook Connect.
There was a
and
time
so
with
it's
Spotify.
A choice.
Spotify was like that for a while, where you could only log in through Facebook. And I'm like, wait a second, come on, what about the rest of us? I don't like using Facebook Connect for that reason. Mm-hmm. I like to kind of have it siloed, so in case, you know, next best thing comes along, I can switch. Or it's just kind of, you know, crowded to have it all in one thing. You know what I mean? Like, I like having my own passwords for my own site. If I want to delete that site, delete it.
Yep. Manage it with a password manager, and it's just as convenient, you know, for the most part.
But Facebook, I'm sure people delete on a daily basis and then come back. So they keep it for a while?
They 14 days to change your mind. And changing your mind involves signing in. So if you sign in, it cancels your delete request. If you just don't think about it or you sign in on your mobile and you're like, oh, you know, log in without thinking about it before it's processed. And you think, oh, well, it hasn't been deleted yet. Yeah, I can check one last time. No, you've canceled the process at that point.
Oh, you've canceled it. It doesn't reset the clock?
No, it doesn't reset the clock. You have to do it again. And then I think the Facebook login also, you know, you have to be aware of that because that's also telling Facebook, no, you're still using it.
So that's a good idea, though, because also if you look at these apps and you say, hey, look, it's also, by the way, a good idea to look at these apps and kind of disconnect any that you don't need anymore.
Yeah, because, it's good to trim the fat.
Kind of cleaning out the system there.
Absolutely. So there you go, Dee. I hope that that's helpful to you. And let us know how it goes. Hopefully it makes your friends a little less confused when they do search for you. I, too, have an email here in the mailbag. It's from Michael in Kentucky, who says, hello, with Apple adopting wireless charging, it's making me go back and look at what Samsung has on their phones. Is wireless charging safe, or should I pass? I have the Galaxy S8 Plus. And we're talking about this a little bit before the show. This is a tough question to answer because I suppose the answer is there is no definitive answer, but people feel very strongly either one way or another about the potential effects of technologies like Wi-Fi or inductive charging, which is what you have with this kind of cordless wireless charging of your smartphones.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Like, how long has this been around, number one? I mean, it just came to the iPhone, so it didn't exist before that.
Well,
no,
well,
I'm just kidding.
Okay. Oh, man.
Just kidding.
I was worried I was going to have to do an intervention here.
The chat room was feeling a little unlively. I wanted to get them up and going. I'm just kidding. But
you woke them up.
But the reality is that, you know, it hasn't been around for a long time.
In the grand scheme of things.
In the grand scheme of things. You know, we don't have any studies, so who knows? I don't know. I thought about this because I did have a wireless charger next to my bed, you know, on my nightstand, and it seems convenient. You put your phone there, but then you think about it, you're like, a lot of the night, this thing is just, you know, what's it doing all night, you know? And it's like, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
This is passing a little electromagnetic field in between the two points. It's not doing anything beyond that.
You think?
That's my personal view, but I realize everybody feels differently about this.
What if there's like a camera that can give you like a heat map of what's happening like in that thing, and you see like a little bit just kind of like bouncing off to the side, and you're just like, where's that little radiation going?
It's going right into your brains.
I will say, I did feel like when I had that wireless charger next to my bed that I woke up just feeling a little more energized.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's like your own battery had charged up just a little bit. Yeah.
Maybe it was just in my head. I don't know. Again.
Very good. I don't know if we have a concrete answer for this, but I think a lot of people would either argue pretty strongly for or against. Padre's in the chat room, for example, and you know, he says very safe, it's just not that efficient, which is true. It's not as efficient. Some of the things, you know, in reading up on this, a lot of people were saying, well, actually plugged in charging is more dangerous, because at least there you have the ability to actually experience some sort of shock in the process. Probably not going to happen. More so than this electromagnetic field that's not going to shock you necessarily. I guess the concern is, what are the long-term ramifications if we've studied this on, you know, for not very long?
Yeah, and it is convenient. You can't deny that. And when it's in more places and you can just put your phone down in a bunch of different places, it's pretty nice to have, especially if you live the wireless world where you have one at your desk, you know, at work, and then you have one at home, mm-hmm. Especially with the fast charging, because before it wasn't that fast. Now with the newer phones, it's pretty fast. Although, yeah, I think so with the iPhone, they're not using the full charge, apparently. Like, it's not fast charge on wireless.
Through wireless?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I need to check on that. But I can definitely say with the Samsungs, when they put the fast wireless charging, like, you have a special charger. Like, it's a little bit faster. It's pretty amazing. Like, it's pretty worth it.
Yeah. Once you go fast charge, it's hard to go back. Yeah. I've heard the same about wireless charging, but I've not really jumped in on that. Outside of, like, you know, the Moto, some of the Android Wear watches come with a wireless charging kit. That's just how they charge. Mm-hmm. That's about the only wireless charging I've been exposed to on a regular basis. And, yeah, it's convenient, but it's, at the same time, it's not something that I couldn't live without.
Yeah, and the other part is, like, when you put your device on the charging pad, a lot of times there's, like, a little sweet spot that you kind of have to hit, especially with the iPhone. It's the Samsung, it kind of like sits in the, if you get the official charger, obviously it sits properly. But even with that, you can put it off to the side a little bit. And I've had my phone not charge overnight because of that. Or maybe it moved a little bit or something like that. So that's the other side. For me, sometimes just like that reassuring, like you plug it in, you know it's plugging in. Yeah. Although I've woken up sometimes with that not plugged in, you know, I'm sure you've done that where you think it's charging all night and it's not.
You think it's plugged in into the wall and it turns out you wake up in the morning and it got jiggled out just enough.
Or there's a switch on the wall, my in-law's house. Yeah. You turn the light switch off and it controls one of the power outlets. Mm-hmm. And my father-in-law's a contractor, so he knows it's like a standard. If you're like an electrical person, there's a standard. It's like the bottom switch, I think, is always like the one that's switched, the bottom power outlet.
Okay.
I'm not that smart, so I don't know which one it is. So I always plug it into that one, and I turn off the light, and it goes off.
And pew!
Yeah.
Well, thankfully, because I have the world's smallest phone with the world's smallest battery, I will never have to worry about battery issues again, which is probably exactly opposite of what I would actually have to worry about.
That just picks up a charge just kind of anywhere in the air, right?
As I walk, it feels the vibration of my legs hitting the concrete.
They can do that for watches. Why they should do that for phones.
I agree. We should go into product marketing and product creation. Let's do that.
Let's
after
do it.
This.
Done.
Rich DeMuro. Awesome having you on. Thank you so much for coming on and doing screensavers with me.
Thanks for having me on. This was a blast. This was so much fun. I mean, this is the longest I've ever talked in one day.
Between this and the tech guy, I know.
I'm going to go home and not say anything for the rest of the night.
Excellent. So, just veg out because you've got another day tomorrow of being a tech guy.
Doing the tech guy. Yeah, one more day of the tech guy, which is awesome. So we'll do that tomorrow and have a blast.
Right on. And then when people want to follow you when you're not here here at Twit helping out on the shows, where can they do that?
My website is richontech.tv. I'm on, there it is, look at that. Nice. I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook and Instagram. And let's see, if I had to rank those, I'd say Facebook number one, Twitter number two, Instagram number three.
Facebook number one.
Well, I share, I share the most on Twitter, I'd say. You know what I mean? Yeah, like on an instant basis. Facebook, it kind of like the most important stuff bubbles up to that.
Okay.
And then I'll just throw anything on the website.
Yeah, right on. Excellent. Well, Rich, really appreciate it. This has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much. You can start drinking your beer while I wrap the show up. Go ahead. I'm sure it's delicious, although it might not be refrigerated.
It's actually cold.
Oh, is it?
This was delivered cold. That mailbox is actually a tiny refrigerator.
Yeah. That's what I saw.
There's a six-pack in there, actually.
I did not see a six-pack in there. Twit has a newsletter. Don't know if you are aware or subscribed, but if you want to sign up for it, you can. twit.tv/newsletter. You'll get all the news about what's going on here at the network, announcements, plus you'll find out what's happening on future shows, guests that we have coming down the pipeline, awesome guests that we've had, like Rich DeMuro, and a whole lot more. twit.tv/newsletter to check that out. If you want to subscribe to this show, you most certainly can, and you should if you aren't already. twit.tv/NSS for new screensavers. If you go there, all the information that you need to subscribe is listed on the page. You can also find us on YouTube, youtube.com/thenewscreensavers. And if you want to be part of the show, we love hearing from you guys. Obviously, we have a whole lot of opportunities in the show for you to get your voice heard on here. So send us an email, newscreensavers@twit.tv. Send us your questions, and you know, we might pick them and answer your question live on the show. But as of now, I think that's it. We're going to get to drinking some beer. I'm Jason Howell here with Rich DeMuro, and we've had a lot of fun. We thank you for joining us for the new screensavers, and it's time to go. Have a great day. Bye, everyone. Woo!